This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. Stratomatic began as a company in 1961 when Hal Richmond, a Bucknell University mathematics student, began selling an early version of his baseball tabletop game out of his basement. He even bought advertising space in Sports Illustrated. Richmond, who was inducted into the National Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, would later release football, basketball, and hockey as well. It all started for the Long Islander when he was just 11 years old, when he created a dice baseball game that included a probability table. Next February, Stratomatic celebrates its 60th anniversary. And with baseball on hold because of the coronavirus, Stratomatic hasn't missed a step on the diamond, going strong with people developing new leagues and the company simulating an entire season. My guest on Sports Jam is Hal Richmond's son, Adam Richmond, who is now the president of Stratomatic. Just one of the many impressive jobs he has. A quick peek on the Stratomatic.com website will catch you up on how this game is played.
Dan?
I thought you said we were going to be playing baseball.
We are. Stratomatic offers the most realistic baseball simulation out there.
Then why'd you tell me to dress up?
For the video thumbnail.
Wait, what video?
So how do you play this game?
It's easy.
We use each player's stats from previous years and generate a series of outcomes on their card based on the stats.
I have Mike Trout's player card here, and I want to match him up against Pedro Martinez. Notice Mike Trout's card has a 1, 2, and a 3, and Pedro Martinez's has a 4, 5, and a 6. These numbers correspond to the white die. In each column, there's different numbers here, and these numbers correspond to the red dice.
1, 5?
That's a home run!
Ah!
Ah!
To make it as realistic as possible, you can track the different outcomes on a series of score sheets, like a real baseball game.
How do they do it?
Hours of research, a passion for all sports, and an endless imagination.
And joining us on Sports Jam is Adam Richmond, the co-founder of Double Nickel Entertainment, and he's also the president of Stratomatic. Welcome to Sports Jam, Adam.
Doug, it's great to be here. Great to talk to you. I hope that you and everybody listening is well and safe.
Yeah, we're talking under very unusual times, as you know. Your family doing okay?
Everybody is fine, luckily. You know, we're all quarantined in New York and waiting for the world to change.
Yeah, it will be different. The new norm. The norm when it comes to Stratomatic. Are we seeing an uptick in the number of people that are playing this multi-platform leader in sports simulation games? Are we seeing more and more people now with a little bit more time and a little bit more time at home picking up Stratomatic?
Yeah, so it's absolutely. And I think, you know, Doug, what we're seeing, and it's strange to in the midst of what's going on, which is so horrible. And we can't wait till, as I mentioned earlier, till things change, till the world goes back to normal. But in the midst of all that, Stratomatic, as are, you know, many content companies that that you can stream into from home, or that are producing old school board games, and Stratomatic is actually doing both, are seeing a huge rise in its number of users, in its number of products that are purchased, and we are definitely in that category. We've been on growth mode for quite a while. Last year was actually our biggest sales year ever, and this year we'll blow it away in terms of sales and in terms of customer engagement.
Adam Richmond turned this company around. Now, it always had a great brand name, and a lot of people stuck with Stratomatic, but Stratomatic Media became a huge success under the direction of Adam Richmond. You relaunched the Stratomatic website, which really was a huge success.
Well, thank you. I'm very fortunate at Stratomatic that we have an amazing team of people that work for us really all over the country. When I got involved in the business about 9 years ago, 9-10 years ago, we had a couple different agendas, and one of them was really to take the business from what it was for decades, and actually we're entering our 60th year in 2021. For decades, it was really a mail order company, and really transition it into being an internet commerce company and a tech company. And we really did that by looking at it in a new way and looking at the brand in a new way. You know, the brand has tremendous love and tremendous goodwill, and really what it stands for, what it's always stood for and what it still stands for is reliability and accuracy. So it's always been about our reliability and accuracy of statistics. It still is. Really, at its core, the organization is a research institute. And for decades, every year, that research group within Stratomatic would come out with the perfect data set for our board games and for the digital games that the company made. And that data was expressed for board games in card form, where there'd be player cards for every card, for every player in baseball, football, basketball, and hockey. And in terms of digital platforms, it would be a data profile for each of those players that could be downloaded into the different games on different platforms. And in the last 9 years, we've increased our digital game platform base exponentially. We're not just on the Windows platform. We also have our very robust Stratomatic 365 platform, where we have baseball and football games, which is kind of Stratomatic fantasy style, which can be played online. And then also we're obviously, like everyone, available via app too. So you know, and the other thing that changed is that we decided that, you know, the history of sports would always be an incredibly important part of the company, and it still is. We have the richest game libraries in terms of depth of seasons and detail anywhere. Our baseball library goes back to the late 1800s. But now you can also look prospectively with Stratomatic, because about 5 years ago we created a product called Stratomatic Baseball Daily. And what that is a product that when MLB is playing in season, you can download new data every day, and your Stratomatic digital platforms will update every day with in-season games. And so since we created that product, we've been actually simulating sports events in advance of them happening. So we've simulated World Series before they happened, and we did the NBA lockout a few years ago. And basically, it was this sort of thinking that when everything started happening with the quarantine, led us to the idea of actually simulating the 2020 baseball season daily, and which is what we're doing. We're actually simulating the schedule as it would have been every single day, and that's just been tremendous. As you know, as when I talked earlier about sort of the company transitioning into becoming more of a tech company and more of an information company, it's these sorts of programs and this sort of content that really is moving us in that direction. And people are coming to us now, not just for a connection to Stratomatic, but for a connection to sports. Because obviously, without there being professional sports being played, the place for simulation in this landscape has become very important, and Stratomatic is really at the forefront of that, providing sports lovers with a connection to the sports that they love and that they miss.
It's really a great idea. How are the Mets and Yankees doing in the simulated games?
They're doing well. I mean, the Cubs, though, are doing really well. Cleveland is doing really well. You know, it's what's been fascinating is that we've had outlets who are literally reporting the Stratomatic results, media outlets, on a daily basis, just like they would the normal baseball season. And we have other partnerships with larger media organizations that are about to be announced that that are going to be carrying us through until baseball starts. And those will be announced again in probably in the next couple weeks.
Unfortunately, I think the fix would have to be in, even in Stratomatic, for the Pirates to have a successful season, my team. You well, can't help me out with that, can you?
I can't help you. You know, we are very the results of the sim are sacrosanct. We don't get involved at all in terms of, you know, massaging it, or it is what it is, you know.
I'll take the 1971 Pirates team.
Sounds like a plan.
You know, we're going to get into a lot of your background here on Sports Jam. We're speaking with Adam Richman, but where did the passion for Stratomatic come for you? Because you have so many different outlets. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, you're the co-founder of Double Nickel Entertainment. and the producer of Gran Torino, Clint Eastwood's fabulous film. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But where did the passion for Strat-O-Matic come from?
So, you know, the passion for Strat-O-Matic came from a few places. You know, my father invented this game when he was 11 years old, and I went for undergrad. I went to Tufts University, studied. We had a very sort of creative educational experience there. Really studied creative writing and also the producing of live theater, and really enjoyed this idea of creating product in my early career. It was theater that people could enjoy and really became sort of part of the cultural fabric. And that's what my early career was really about. And, you know, that sort of transitioned into work and to film and TV. And, you know, it all kind of led back to Strat-O-Matic because I realized that where I got a lot of joy was creating and being involved in the distribution of content that was really contributing to the cultural conversation. And Strat-O-Matic, just like all the work that I'm doing at Double Nickel, very much does that. And Strat-O-Matic more so now than ever in terms of its contributions to the cultural fabric. Because right now, if you want baseball or basketball or football or hockey, you're coming to Strat-O-Matic.
Do you remember the first conversation you had with Dad about Strat-O-Matic?
You know, the first conversation might be hard to remember, but like what I can tell you about when I was growing up, Strat-O-Matic was really the third sibling. You know, it was my sister, me, and Strat-O-Matic. And Strat-O-Matic really was always there. We were raised to do what you love. You know, my father went to work every day doing something that he loved to do. And so that's how my sister and I were raised, under sort of the idea that find something you're passionate about and figure out a way to make a living doing it. And, you know, when my father was watching baseball or basketball or football or hockey, it's not that he didn't enjoy it. He did, but it was also work. So he was, you know, keeping track of stats and talking to his colleagues in the research group about it. And it was always about, it was always about both work and enjoyment. So for me, you know, watching sports and sort of the connection to sports was also sort of connected to, oh, well, that's also what's putting food on our table. So we had a very different sort of view of sports in our house growing up, in that it was also very much related to work.
Did he tell you where that seed germinated from?
So for the idea for Strat-O-Matic, what really came from, you know, my father was a frustrated athlete, and he had a passion at an early age for numbers. And so he took his frustration with his own athleticism and his passion for numbers and really realized, you know, he would never say this because he's too modest, but he's really an artist, and his canvas is numbers, and sort of the arena to explore that art is sports. So, you know, that's where this came from. It originally came from the fact that he was frustrated with his ability in sports. And so he decided that he would basically figure out a way to manage sports through these games. And that's essentially what Strat-O-Matic is. It's an opportunity to manage teams, and it's the ultimate fantasy sports experience, because you get to control all these teams. And unlike just traditional fantasy sports, with Strat-O-Matic, you can actually meld the fantasy into teams from any era. So you could have, you know, Yankees or Pirates from all different eras and put together the ultimate franchise.
I love, on the website, the video on how to play Strat-O-Matic. It's pretty simple and it's fun, but it's right to the point.
Yes, it's right to the point. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that we're doing and we continue to do is, you know, especially as we broaden our audience, and our audience right now, which we're thrilled about, is getting younger and younger with what's been going on with COVID and the fact that there's been no baseball. We've been trying to make our products even more accessible to a mass audience. And part of that is actually putting together video that explains how to play the game, so that people have a very easy jump-in point to any Strat-O-Matic product. And I think what you'll be seeing from us in the next few months is are more and more of those that we'll be producing, so that people don't feel, you know, Strat-O-Matic is a game of a lot of numbers, and I think people feel sometimes that if when you open a box and you see a lot of instructions, a lot of younger people today don't want to read instructions. They actually just want to watch a 2 or 3 minute video that tells you how to do something. So we're going to be producing a lot more of that. And I think the other thing that you'll see, I mean, we have a huge announcement coming next year about another digital platform that we'll be on that we're really excited about. And, you know, a lot of this is really just taking the algorithms that my father invented 60 years ago and have been refined over these six decades, and now moving these games to all the different platforms that are available, because obviously with the technology, there's so much opportunity to have Strat everywhere, or Strat anywhere, I guess, which is great.
I can't push you into the lines of the diamond to get a little more information on that new platform, could I?
I can't talk about it right now, but I look forward. I'd love to come back, you know, early in the new year and tell you more about it then.
Sounds great. Rolling the Dice is just part of Strat-O-Matic Media, the multi-platform leader in sports simulation games that rates real players and teams for professional baseball, football, basketball, hockey, and college football. And my guest on Sports Jam is Adam Richmond, who is the president of Strat-O-Matic Media. And he's also the co-founder of Double Nickel Entertainment. Let's find out more about Adam Richmond here on Sports Jam. Now, you have an 8-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. Is this going to be passed down to them as well?
The love of Strat-O-Matic definitely will be. It's so funny because we were just talking about they're really at the ages now where we could really start teaching them Strat-O-Matic. And, you know, and the other thing that I should mention, which relates to actually teaching my kids Strat-O-Matic, that's happened in this quarantine period, and is, you know, we are getting so many emails and letters from people that they're teaching their kids Strat-O-Matic and using it, teaching their kids how to play Strat-O-Matic and using it basically as a tool to teach them probability and to teach them math and to teach them history. Because when you play our Negro League set, it basically brings the Negro Leagues back to life, and it's a wonderful way to talk about the civil rights movement with your children. And then it also is teaching kids English and writing skills, because you know, what some parents are doing, they've written to us, is that they're having, after they finish a game, they're actually having their kids write up a report of what happened in the game, like they are the sports broadcaster on TV, or writing an article for a newspaper, or for radio. And that's actually how a lot of broadcasters today, who are big Strat fans, got their start, is they first started reporting when they were kids playing Strat-O-Matic. They would write up reports on their games, just like the professional broadcasters were for the professional games that are being played. And sort of that's being passed down now in an educational setting. And what we're actually doing right now is we're actually going to be hitting hard that educational market as well, because we think it's, you know, Strat is always has a long history of being taught in schools. And right now with all, you know, with children being taught all across the country at home, we feel like it's a terrific tool for parents to use that kids will enjoy in terms of learning about these different subjects.
That's really a great idea. You know, not just young people who maybe want to be broadcasters and are learning, you mentioned that, but some of the old-time broadcasters, and forgive me, but I'm going to mention Bill Daughtry, not old Bill.
Of course.
Not old Bill, but Bill is a huge Strat-O-Matic player. He has been for a long time, recently retired from WBGO, and longtime ESPN and CBS sports guy. He loves Strat-O-Matic, and like many others, he gets into it.
He does. And first of all, I'm so glad you brought up Bill. I have to give a huge shout out to Bill, who's a close family friend of ours. Hello, Bill. I hope that you and everybody is well. We haven't spoken in a few weeks, but I did get to see Bill in February, which was great. Yes, I mean, Bill is a perfect example. And you know, Bill is such a phenomenal guy. I've been a huge supporter of our company and what we do, as have so many broadcasters. Bob Costas, sports players who've become broadcasters now, like Doug Glanville, Keith Hernandez. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We have a wonderful stable of fans from the broadcasting community.
I have to speak good about Bill Daughtry, because he would tell everybody what kind of a golfer
I am, and he wouldn't be able to lie about that, and he knows that I am certainly not a good golfer. But Adam, you mentioned about this educational side. Whether it be about Stratomatic or not, what's been the most difficult conversation you've had with your wife and the kids during this very unique crisis?
You know, I think some of the hard things have been why our kids can't go back to school and see their friends, and why they can't see their Nana and Pop-Pop, my parents, or their aunts and uncles and their cousins. And why when we go outside, which, you know, the last few weeks has been very infrequent just because of the surge that's been going on in New York, although it's starting to get better, which is great, why they've had to wear masks. And so those, you know, I think explaining this to kids, I mean, our kids are totally, they totally get it. And they, you know, the thing that my wife and I decided from the beginning of this is that we would always tell them everything that was going on, because we didn't want to hide and pretend, because it's all around us. You know, it's, I mean, their school has been canceled. They can't interact with their friends. They can't interact with their family. The most challenging thing for my wife and I has been that we both work full time. And, you know, we have two young kids who basically need us to help teach them now at home with all of the distance learning. And, you know, I think my friends who have kids who are in junior high school, even, or high school, they can just be kind of left to their own device, the kids that are older, on distance learning platforms. But kids that are our kids' age, who are still learning how to read, still learning about math, or building all those fundamental skills, they really need to have an adult with them the whole time when they're doing distance learning. So that has been incredibly challenging. All that being said, we feel incredibly lucky and incredibly blessed that we are all healthy and that we have been able to shelter in place at home. We know some people haven't had the ability to do that because they have to work. And whether they're first responders, who we are just thanking every day and opening our windows and standing outside and clapping for every night at 7 o'clock, or they're people who are in other fields who still had to work and have been putting themselves out there every day and taking that risk. You know, we applaud everyone who's had to work outside of the home right now, and especially our first responders, and are just wishing everyone well.
Well said, Adam. You know, I know that creativity really runs through your blood, and that your kids are lucky, because I'm sure you've had some creative suggestions on how they can spend their time. At a very young age, you founded a theater company, Next Stage Productions. You were 19, right?
I did. Yes, I was 19. So, you know, that was sort of my first big foray into producing and content. And, you know, and again, the way that I sort of look at my career is, you know, content is so many things. Content is film, it's television, it's games, whether they be board games or digital games, or content is a sim that's just put up online. Content are things that people can experience and that they can enjoy and that, you know, get into them somehow, that they get under the fabric of their ideas, and they're things that people can discuss. And Next Stage, you know, I was really in college, at Tufts. The summer after my freshman year, I was with a very old friend of mine from first grade, a friend of mine named Lucy Lawrence. And big shout out to Lucy right now, who's in Denver. And we were in the Berkshires one summer. We went to a theater there called the Sharon Playhouse. And the Sharon Playhouse, we saw a show there, a musical called A My Name is Alice. To be honest, it was not a very good production. But what I noticed about it, which was very interesting, was that they didn't produce it. It was an outside production company that brought that production to the Sharon Playhouse. So when I got back to Tufts in the fall of my sophomore year, I wrote to the Sharon Playhouse and I said, "Hey, you know, I told them a little bit about myself, and I told them that I had a theater company, and I did, that I'd started at Tufts." And it was initially called actually the Tufts University Repertory Company. I basically offered them our services. And I said, you know, we'd love to come and produce your season at Sharon this coming summer. And, here's the business terms that we would need, and here's, you know, what we would require. And, you know, I didn't really think much of it. And about 4 weeks after I sent the letter, I got a letter back from them, and they said, would you be willing to drive down? So my girlfriend at the time and I then drove down, and we met with them and made a whole proposal of what we would do that summer, and they hired us. And so that's when, you know, Next Stage Productions was born, and we spent a few summers in the Berkshires at different theaters producing theater, and then we moved the company to New York City, where we were doing more original work. It was kind of off Broadway, and for me, it was just an amazing experience in terms of producing, learning about producing, learning how to run a business. We had at different points up to 50 people working for us, and it was an amazing, at such a young age, it was an amazing way to learn how to manage creativity, and that sort of led to my thinking about going to business school, because I realized that so much of what I was doing, even though it was creative, needed sort of a business foundation. And so that's why I applied to business school, and, you know, that was a wonderful decision for me. Was fortunate enough to go to Harvard Business School and just learned a ton there. Made some additional amazing friends than I had already had and that I met there. And that was just sort of a great balancing for my educational views in terms of having both a creative foundation and a business foundation.
Yeah, what a combination. English and drama major at Tufts University. Then you got your MBA, as you mentioned, at Harvard Business School. But this was just a launching of your career. You became the senior VP of production and development for Motion Picture Corporation of America. And I know you attended a lot of film festivals while in that role. Do you have a favorite?
So I did. So I was hired. I was working at United Talent. I lived out in LA for 7 years, and I was working at United Talent Agency for a wonderful man named Howard Cohen, who ran the Indie Film Group there. And I was hired away from Howard. I was his assistant, and Howard very generously took me to different film festivals with him, and just really was just a fantastic mentor, and he's still a fantastic guy. He runs a wonderful distribution company called Roadside Attractions that just does amazing work. And so while I was at Sundance with Howard, I met a guy named Brad Crevoy, who ran a company called Motion Picture Corporation, who produced Dumb and Dumber and Kingpin, and amongst some other really successful comedies. And I met him at Sundance at a dinner party that I was at there, and he had just produced Annie for ABC. And, you know, I said to him, oh, you know, here's some other things that you could bring to ABC. And he was like, huh, you should come and work for me and run production and development for me. So after some negotiation, I went over there and ran production and development for him for 4 years and produced 10 movies while I was there. And this was in the early 2000s. It was a very different time for the movie business. It was really before series television became sort of the du jour. And it was really when movies were what all the cable channels were interested in, and really was sort of the driver of creativity, the movie business. Well, now I would really say it's the television business in Hollywood is really the driver, not the movie business as much, but in terms of telling great stories. So yes, I was really fortunate. I got to really learn the movie business first from Howard at UTA, and then really experiencing it myself, running all these different productions at MPCA. And at that time, It was what we called the sort of go-go days of German tax funds, where there were a lot of tax funds from Germany that were funding production of films in North America. So North American films, but then we would in some cases go back and shoot them in places like Germany or Greece or South Africa. And so I, in those 10 movies, got to travel pretty much all over the world producing films and learning how to put together both the physical side and the financing side of these films. And it was just a phenomenal experience. It was almost like 4 more years of film school, frankly. Like, it was just a terrific learning experience. And then towards the end of that, my friend Jeanette Kahn, who was the president and editor-in-chief of DC Comics and Mad Magazine, called me and said that she was going to be leaving DC, and she was offered a production deal at Warner Brothers, but she needed someone a bit more seasoned in the film and television space to be her partner. And I basically told her that I'd leave my job that day. And I did. And we started our company. And, you know, I've been so fortunate that we've been together for 14 years. And she's the most amazing partner and one of the most amazing people I've ever known and in my life. She's just a creative force. And we do business the same way and love what we do. And we've made a bunch of movies and have a bunch of television shows, series that are set up right now. Our signature piece is Gran Torino, which was Clint Eastwood's most successful box office film of his career that he starred in, the biggest box office of any movie he'd ever starred in. And we knew the movie was good, and we were really proud of it when we were making it. I mean, we never knew at that time that it would sort of rise to that level in terms of its commercial success. And we were very fortunate. Audiences really embraced it. And again, it was sort of a classic double nickel piece of content in that it's about multiculturalism and it's about exploring people's differences, and we're very, very proud of that and of all the films we've made.
Get off my lawn.
You better watch your back.
Thank you.
I heard there was some trouble in the neighborhood. Why didn't you call the police?
I prayed that they would show up, but nobody answered. Why are you bringing me all this garbage anyway?
Because you saved Tao.
I didn't save anybody.
You're a hero to the neighborhood.
I'm not a hero.
We're having barbecue. You want to come over? We've got beer, too.
I might as well drink with strangers. Those guys were here the other night. What about them?
Just a gang.
Here's the deal. You stay away, because if I have to come back here again, it's going to be ugly.
That's just a fabulous film, Gran Torino. Now, we know that the theme song is by Jamie Cullum.
Gentle nights and the breeze blows, whispers through Gran Torino, whistling another tired song. Engines hum and bitter dreams grow, heart locked in a Gran Torino, beats a lonely rhythm all night long.
And we know that Clint Eastwood is also a big jazz fan. Are you?
You know, I am a big jazz fan, but I wouldn't say that I know a lot about the history of jazz. But, you know, it's interesting because right now my wife and I, and obviously this is, we're trying to look at this sort of the bright spots of the quarantine. And one of them is that we're getting to sort of show our kids new genres of music and new movies and things like this. So, you know, we've been trying to introduce them to new music every week, a new sort of genre of music. And they particularly love jazz, and my daughter Sega especially. And so that's been a lot of fun listening to jazz with her.
If you haven't introduced her, but you probably already have because of Jamie singing the theme song for Gran Torino, Jamie Cullum is the perfect for young and old. He's an old soul with a great young sound, and when you see him perform live, he just blows you away.
Engines hum and bitter dreams grow, a heart locked in a Gran Torino, beats a lonely rhythm all night long. May I be so bold and still need someone to hold that shudders my skin, this sparkling.
Wow. I will definitely, I'll have to dive a little deeper in his library. Thank you for that. It's a great suggestion. Thanks, Doug.
I think she'll love him. Now, she also is part of a program at NJPAC right here in Newark.
She is. Yeah. So, and thank you for bringing that up. So I'm so happy to talk about that. So my daughter is a member of a company that's based in Harlem called National Dance Institute, and my wife is actually on the board of the company. And National Dance Institute was started, I think it's almost 50 years ago now, by Jacques Nabois, who is the Balanchine New York City dancer, who started this organization, which is really about bringing dance into schools across the country. And basically bringing the arts into schools across the country where they don't necessarily have these programs. And it is all about dance. And I mean, it's just amazing what these kids from all over New York City and all over the US are doing with the NDI program. But it's also about leadership. It's really teaching kids about leadership and a teamwork and creativity and stick-to-itiveness. And we as a family feel so fortunate to be involved with NDI, and our daughter is just having a blast with it, and I know that my wife is just so pleased to be on the board of directors for the organization. NDI.org.
Arts enriches the soul, right?
It's so true, Doug. I think right now, with everything going on, and I think we're seeing so many organizations take such big hits, especially nonprofits and arts organizations. Like, I think we really have to, as the country starts to slowly, find some sort of new normal, we have to keep a really close eye on our arts organizations because they're going to need everyone's help to stay alive. And it's a very volatile time for a lot of these nonprofits that are doing such important things in all of our communities.
Before I let you go, Adam, you've had so much success. I want to know your most embarrassing moment at Triber High School.
Oh my gosh. My most embarrassing moment at Schreiber High School. That's a really interesting question. Gosh, there were so many. There were so many. I remember that there was one concert. I was in we were doing a I was in the me and my buddies were in the there was something called on Long Island called NISMA, where you would go to these. It was a music concert that you would compete in, and we were going to this event, and I remember walking up to the stage for the concert, and I remember tripping on something as I was walking up, and just like could not have been more embarrassed. But you're like a clunky kid going through adolescence. I guess it's to be expected.
This is the last question I have for you. So, your family and Jeanette, we have to take them out of this question. Okay. You get to play Strat-O-Matic against one person, not family and not close relatives. Who gets to be the person that plays against you and why?
Huh. That's a great question. It's a great question. And I think the person that I would want to play Strat-O-Matic with, I think I'd be hard to choose one, but I will choose two, if that's okay. I
Sure.
think one of them would be Bill, because every time I'm around Bill Daughtry, it is, he's just such a he is such a positive force in terms of his energy, and he loves Strat-O-Matic so much. So the passion that he has for Strat-O-Matic, it would be so much fun to play a game of Strat with him. There's no question. And also just because I know him so well, but we've actually never played Strat together. So Bill would be one of the people. And then the other person that I would probably want to, if I had to choose, I would probably want to play Strat with Doug Glanville. Because Doug Glanville is another huge, passionate Strat-O-Matic player. And I have a great story for you about Doug. So Doug, when he was playing Pro Ball, for, I think he was on the Cubs at that time, or I think he was, he actually sent a whole package into my father, of why his rating should go up from a 2 to a 1. And basically, like, he basically put together this whole thesis dissertation on why the rating that Strat-O-Matic had given him was incorrect. And I just love that story because it shows sort of the passion of, not just, you know, anyone, but actually a professional, amazing ball player for the game, and how important the game is and sort of the lexicon of baseball. And so, yeah, I think Doug would be the other person, definitely.
Two terrific choices. Both Bill Daughtry and Doug Glanville have both been guests on Sports Jam, and now so has Adam Richmond. Adam, what a great time to meet you virtually on the phone here, but we hope that at some point I get to see you face-to-face. Continued success with Stratomatic and with Double Nickel Entertainment, and have the best of times with your family. Even though it's a crisis, I know that you're doing all you can for your loved ones.
Thank you so much, Doug. I really enjoyed the discussion. I look forward to meeting you in person and speaking again soon.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all our shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam, or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or on iTunes. Until our next Sports Jam session, I will hopefully see you soon at the game.